We have one case being argued at 1:30, and then there's going to be another case at 2, but we'll have a panel change. So obviously they're not here to watch this first case. I understand everybody's checked in and is ready, so I'll ask the, well, let me introduce the panel first. To my left is Justice Dana Womack. I'm Elizabeth Kerr, and to my right is Justice Dabney Basil. So with that, I'll ask the clerk to call the case.
Now call Bluestone Natural Resources, the second LLC, versus Nanny Panther Energy LP. May it please the court, Mr. Robert G. Hargrove will argue for the appellant. Mr. H. Allen Pennington Jr. will argue for the appellate.
You may proceed, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, Justices. Thank you. May it please the court. On June the 20th, 1986, Nettie Freeman Engler and some others, as grantors, conveyed a 645.569 acre tract of land in Tarrant County to Republic Bank, Texas, as grantee, as a trustee. The grantors in this 1986 deed, which is what we're here today about, of course, reserved to themselves a 1/8 non-participating royalty interest in the tract. This reservation, which is what the case is about, is set out on the first page of the handout that we provided earlier today. Whatever was not reserved to the grantors by way of this paragraph, by way of this reservation, was conveyed to the grantee. A non-participating royalty interest, NPRI is the abbreviation that's often used, has two basic characteristics. The first is that it's non-participating. What that means is what the second sentence, at least the first part of it, says. That's actually language that's not highlighted in the handout that I gave you because it's not directly germane to what we're fighting about today. But it basically says that even though the grantee is going to take what's left subject to this royalty interest, the grantee is going to get the exclusive right to execute oil and gas leases, including on the reserved royalty interest, and the exclusive right, if they were to so choose, to explore and produce oil and gas. Now, normally that executive, as it would be called, would lease that right to an oil company. And the executive right in 2004 did exercise that right. They executed oil and gas lease. 34 wells were drilled. My client, Bluestone Natural Resources, 2 LLC, now operates those wells. And so the case is a dispute about whether or not Bluestone has paid the royalty interest, the RI part of the NPRI, correctly.
Yeah, counsel, do you agree that Quicksilver had not been deducting post-production costs before your client acquired its interest?
Yes, Your Honor. We don't dispute that. I don't represent Quicksilver. But that's in the summary judgment record, and there's no countervailing evidence. So, yes, we agree. What's interesting about that point is that if you look at the Burlington case, which we're going to talk about at great length, and it's in the briefs at great length, the court in that case, Burlington tried to make the converse of this same argument that the appellees make here. Burlington said, since these lessors accepted royalties over all these years that did deduct post-production costs, that should inform the court's construction of that instrument, the course of dealing. And the Supreme Court of Texas said no, that since it was an unambiguous overriding royalty interest conveyance, no one had alleged that it was ambiguous, that course of performance evidence didn't matter. It was irrelevant. And so the Supreme Court said that Burlington could not make that point, which is the exact mirror of the point that the Englers make in this case. But yes, to answer your question, Quicksilver did deduct it, or did credit it. The royalty interest is a free 1/8 of gross production of any such oil, gas, or other mineral, set amount to be delivered to grantor's credit free of cost in the pipeline, if any, otherwise free of cost at the mouth of the well.
How did the trial court reach the result in this kind of baby-splitting result here, but allowing the deduction of compression and gathering costs, but allowing the deduction of transportation costs?
Our view is that's not a result that should have been reached on summary judgment, to put it bluntly. The evidence in the record, it must be a construction of the word pipeline, but it's a construction that's not supported by the language of the instrument or by the evidence in the case. The undisputed evidence in the case is that the gas, after it's produced, goes first to the compression and gathering pipeline and then to the transportation pipeline. There's no evidence that the compression and gathering pipeline is not a pipeline. They just say it's not the right kind of pipeline, which again, in our view, is inappropriate extrinsic evidence because we don't have any allegation that this is ambiguous. The court did not articulate at the hearing that we had. What was interesting about the case, there's summary judgment motions, cross motions that were filed. Both motions asked basically for an on-off ruling. Either they're all deductible or they're none deductible. The court granted the Engler motion, denied the Bluestone motion. Days later, the Burlington case came down. Until Burlington, there was not a case in Texas that said what does in the pipeline mean. Lots of cases on mouth of the well or value at the well, so we know what that would have meant, but there was no case on in the pipeline. Now, Williams and Myers, the treatise, has a section about what they think it ought to mean and what other courts in other states have said it meant, but no Texas court ruled on it until Burlington. So there was a motion for reconsideration. Then we did have a hearing on that. So that's the reporter's record. That's the only hearing that we had in this case. But yes, the court, I think baby splitting is a fair characterization, Your Honor. I guess the ruling would have to have been that when, as the Englers urge, that when the overriding or when the non-participating royalty interest deed says pipeline, what it really means is big pipeline or major pipeline or transportation pipeline. But that's not what it says. It says pipeline. And the evidence is that the compression and gathering system that Caltown slash Crestwood operates, they're unaffiliated with Bluestone. These are arm's length contracts. That's in the affidavit of Mr. Gibson. The evidence is that is still a pipeline. It's regulated as a pipeline. There are many statutes and rules that say gathering systems are pipelines. And so I don't know. The court did not articulate the specific basis for her ruling, but that's got to be it. And so in my view, on dueling motions for summary, so first of all, as a matter of law, I think Burlington says that in the pipeline means the equivalent, which is the term Burlington uses, of at the well. Now, the language, the words on the page, granted, they're not literally identical, but I don't see a material difference between the language used in the Burlington instrument and the in the pipeline, if any, language in the Engler NPRI.
Counsel, let me ask you, is there anything in the Burlington opinion, which I confess I have not read with a fine-tooth comb, or in this record? I mean, it's my understanding that separating out the gathering and compressing functions from the ultimate sale downstream is a relatively recent phenomenon, and that gas purchasing used to be done pretty much right there when it was first going into a pipeline of some sort. So does Burlington or anything go into
No, Your Honor.
Whether that matters?
Burlington does not. Burlington does not. That argument, as best as I can tell, at least from the Supreme Court opinion. Now, I haven't gone and picked back through the briefs, but that argument is not addressed in the Supreme Court opinion. The challenge that the Supreme Court had in Burlington, that Burlington had, is their overriding royalty provision actually arguably included a proceeds measure, which classically would make it the royalty not bear post-production costs. You don't have that in Engler. There's nothing in our deed that has anything resembling a proceeds provision. But that's the only argument that the lessors in Burlington made that is referenced in the Supreme Court opinion in Burlington. What you've just referenced about in the old days, you would have a sale at the pipeline, that's alluded to in the affidavit of the Engler's expert, which we've objected to. Again, I think it's extrinsic evidence, and he's a lawyer. He was not designated as an expert in pipelines. Nonetheless, he's real careful in his affidavit because he says in the old days you would have sold when you entered into what they call the major pipeline. The evidence here, that's not where the gas is sold in our case either. It goes from the compression and gathering Crestwood pipeline to the transportation pipeline, but it's sold downstream of that. It's not like in the old days where you would sell it as it enters the pipeline. And so what the Engler's argument essentially is that this deed that creates the non-participating royalty interest calls for valuation of the interest at the point of sale. And that would be a dramatic difference from at the well. And so what Burlington tells us is that when you have at the well or in the pipeline or the receptacles to which the pipeline is attached, what that means is generally near the wellhead. The language that the Burlington Court actually used is it fixes the valuation point at the physical spot where the interest must be delivered. And delivered, that word is in the Engler deed too, at the wellhead or nearby. This gives Burlington the right to subtract post-production costs. And what's interesting is in making that ruling, they actually cite with approval the Williams and Myers treatise that we had submitted to the court before the Burlington case came down that said, here's what the law ought to be. And again, it became the law. And so to answer your question, no, the opinion doesn't get into parsing of differences between what are pipelines and what are not pipelines, but it does say that they're not going to get into extrinsic evidence unless it's an unambiguous instrument. And no one here has argued that this instrument is ambiguous. But if you were to take Mr. Murphy's logic in his affidavit to its ultimate conclusion, then unfortunately not even the transportation costs would have been deductible because there's not a sale as it goes into that energy transfer pipeline. And yet those costs have been found to be deductible, and that decision, that ruling, has not been appealed. And so because of the way that all of that played out, we did not have a lot of testimony or evidence about what are pipelines, what are the natures of pipelines, those sorts of things. I will point out, though, that if we're going to indulge having lawyer experts tell us what these things must have meant, there's evidence in the summary judgment record as well from Bluestone's lawyer expert, Professor Burney, who says pipeline's a pipeline. And it shouldn't matter. And so the way that the Burlington Court set it out was the question is whether or not in the pipeline or into the pipeline establishes a valuation point which is similar to at the well. The Burlington Court found that it did. The notion of a valuation point here is critical because as all of the cases in this area talk about, the gas becomes much more valuable as it moves through this process, as it comes from under the ground, as it goes to the wellhead, as it is compressed, as it's transported. And so that being the case, the idea that you have a valuation point that is at the well or its equivalent is critical in all of these cases because all of the costs that are being deducted are in fact costs of the pipeline. And so there's no dispute but that the costs that are being deducted don't occur until the gas is in the pipeline. And that's what the instrument says.
Is there any disagreement that into the pipeline and in the pipeline mean the same thing?
I think they mean the same thing. We'll hear what Mr. Pennington says. What he does say is that since the Burlington instrument talks about having tanks and receptacles near the pipeline, that's different from the Engler situation. But I would disagree with that because the Engler situation has in the pipeline right after it says at the well. And at the well is as close to the well as anything can be. And so to that end, that what the deed does not say is what the Englers needed to say, which is delivered free of cost in the major pipeline. It says in the pipeline. It's a form deed. The rule in Texas, the default rule, is that a royalty interest is free and clear of post-production costs, but it does bear the cost of production. And so that's the treatment that Bluestone has given this instrument, this interest, and that's the treatment that we respectfully argue that the trial court should have given it. Since neither party has argued that the deed is ambiguous, the affidavit from the expert that the deed should have meant transportation or major pipelines is legally irrelevant. There's no issue but that the gathering pipeline is a real pipeline. And the Burlington case, frankly, in our view, respectfully, resolved what had been the only really interesting issue in this case, which was, does at the well mean the same thing as in the pipeline? So with that, Your Honor, I'll give back a little of my time Bluestone would respectfully, unless there's other questions.
No, sir.
Bluestone would respectfully request that the trial court's judgment be reversed and that judgment be entered rendering, that judgment be rendered that the plaintiffs take nothing. Thank you all.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I appreciate Mr. Hargrove, my friend, giving me all those extra minutes. I'll try to use them judiciously.
Mr. Pennington, I'm not sure that means you get extra.
I thought I'd ask, Your Honor. It's an honor to be before the Court of Appeals, and I would like to explain exactly how this ruling came about. If you look at our motion for summary judgment, you'll see that we did in fact ask that the court declare that this non-participating royalty interest was free of all post-production costs. But in the alternative, we asked that the court designate which, if any, post-production costs were properly chargeable. And so as the arguments went on, I think I remember them a little differently than Mr. Hargrove, but as the arguments went on, I think it became pretty clear that if there was going to be any effect given to the qualifying language in this NPRI, specifically free of cost of, in the pipeline, otherwise free of cost at the mouth of the well, that had to mean something. And so my purpose today is to explain how the court came up with the notion that that allowed for a deduction of transportation costs but not compression and gathering costs. Okay, so let's talk about some of the admissions that Bluestone makes in their brief, because that provides a foundation for the trial court's holding, quite frankly. First off, they focus on that qualifying language, and they say that the term free of cost in the pipeline in the Engler deed establishes the valuation point for the gas, and we agree with that. But the point is that both parties are attempting to give effect and ask for the court's interpretation of that qualifying language, free of cost in the pipeline, otherwise free of cost at the mouth of the well.
Counsel, is your client asking us to read into this deed the word major pipeline?
I don't think so, Your Honor. And that sort of leads into the question about Mr. Murphy's testimony. The objection to Mr. Murphy's testimony is not that it's expert testimony. If you look at a couple of the cases cited in Bluestone's brief, Luckel, Anadarko, both of those cases say that, Hyder as well, you have to give effect to all terms in the description of the royalty. And I think that's what Judge McCoy did, as we see here. The other rule, of course, if I could find it in my outline, is that you can't, even with an unambiguous document, and we agree this is unambiguous, but even in an unambiguous document, you're allowed testimony to explain what words mean. The very first case that I ever tried in 1982 in Corsicana involved a screed, and no one knew what a screed was. I didn't know what a screed was when you started the case, but it certainly wasn't objectionable expert testimony for the jury to be told what a screed was. It's a large leveling device to pour large sections of concrete. And the same deal here. I mean, Mr. Murphy can't offer evidence to contradict the terms of an unambiguous deed, but he can certainly testify based upon his extensive experience since 1981 in the industry as to what pipeline means. And he testifies under oath that pipeline means the pipeline. It doesn't mean the gathering system. That's a different system entirely.
Do you find any significance? I think Bluestone pointed out, and I can't remember if it was their opening brief or their reply brief, that the Crestwood system in the contracts, it refers to it as a pipeline, that it's not just that the gathering system includes the notion of pipeline as part of its definition.
Well, it's anything carrying gas or liquid is going to be a series of pipes. I mean, you know, in your home, you have you have all these, let's talk about the drain lines in your home. You have drain lines coming from your sink and your shower and other places in your home, but no one would call those the sewer line. That's plumbing or drains. The sewer line is where it connects to the city sewer. And it's the same thing here. A gathering system is, of course, going to be consist of pipelines.
Is there anything in Texas pipes. Case law or in any of the treatises that creates the distinction that Mr. Murphy created by virtue of the, from the use of the word pipeline?
Well, there's no case law either way, as far as I'm concerned, Justice Basil, because they took two pages of their brief to talk about all these cases where a gathering system was referred to as a pipeline. But if you look at those, all but one of them are simply reciting facts that were supplied by the parties that had nothing to do with the holding. The one case that the Railroad Commission case they cited, the isolated issue in that case was whether a gathering system was subject to regulation for rate purposes for rate purposes as a pipeline. And the definition of a pipeline with the Railroad Commission was if it went under a road. And it did, and so it was. But what they proved in those two pages is that there's no case that has ever said a gathering system is a pipeline. There's simply not a case saying that. Now, I don't think there's a case saying there's not. And so what you have to look at is the ordinary meaning. And if one of us was out there being asked to execute an oil and gas lease on our minerals, and we were told, well, now there's not going to be any charges till it gets to the pipeline, we're supposed to assume that that's the gathering system, these pipes that go this way and that way, north, south, east, and west. No, the general understanding of that is going to be the pipeline that goes to the Gulf of Mexico or the pipeline that goes to Chicago.
Do you think that was the common understanding back in 1986 when this deed was entered into?
Sure, why not? I mean, that's the testimony, you know, before the court from Mr. Murphy. But my point is he's not contradicting anything. He is simply saying, based on my industry experience, this is what people mean when they say pipeline. Therefore, I think it's admissible. And the very general objection they made to his entire deposition and his entire affidavit was overruled by the court. And therefore, it's before the court. So it's not simply expert testimony. Let's look at the specific language here. So,
well, let me ask you one other question.
Yes,
sir. Bluestone cites this Barrow Shaver case as being directly contrary to the proposition you've just proposed that we can consider custom and usage. What's your feeling about the Barrow Shaver case?
I'm sorry, which case is that?
It's on page 14 of their reply brief, this Barrow Shaver Resources case.
Well, again, the key word there, Justice Basil, is you cannot offer industry testimony to alter or contradict the terms of the document. And that's my whole point, is that he's not contradicting anything. The only thing he's contradicting is their theory of the case. He's not contradicting any statement or any expression of intent in the deed. That would be my view of it. And I probably mistakenly called it custom and use a testimony in my brief. I really didn't mean it as the custom and use as we normally use that phrase. I should have said that he's just explaining a term. He's explaining what a pipeline is and what a pipeline is considered in the industry, just like back in 1982 when someone had to explain to the jury what a screed was. Okay? So let me just walk through the analysis here as to how Judge McCoy got to this result. Okay? She looked at the granting clause of the two deeds, and you have them there. Mr. Hargrove provided them. She looked at the two granting clauses and decided that the granting clause in Hyder was indistinguishable from the granting clause in the Engler Reservation. But then what do you do about this language free of cost in the pipeline, if any, otherwise free of cost in the mouth of the well. Well, what that one thing that does say clearly is that if there is a pipeline, then the valuation is not going to be at the mouth of the well. I mean, if it says nothing else, it says that. That if there's a pipeline, you are not going to value the gas at the wellhead. Otherwise, you have to completely throw out the word otherwise, and that, of course, would not be giving effect to the intent of the parties. And so with that being in that troublesome word for the other side, otherwise being in the deed, the court determined that, well, both parties agree there's a pipeline. Now, they disagree what the pipeline is. Mr. Hargrove says it's a gathering system. Pennington says it's the energy transfer pipeline. But both parties agree there's a pipeline. So that right there is going to negate valuation at the mouth of the well. And that's exactly what they're charging us. If you look at Mr. Gibson's affidavit offered in response to their motion for summary judgment, in paragraph 7, it specifically says we are charging royalty to the anglers. We're charging them for everything after the mouth of the well. So that violates, by its terms, this qualifying language.
You don't think that Burlington stand delivered free of cost in the pipeline is equatable at the mouth of the well, according to Burlington?
I think, Justice, Burlington is a very, very fact-specific case. Number one, that case clearly does not say that any old reference to in the pipeline means that you value the royalty at the mouth of the well. And it had the language it has, which is also found in the Williams and Myers treatise. It says, if we look at what Mr. Hargrove provided us, shall be delivered to S&E or its credit, or to its credit, into the pipeline tank or other receptacle to which any well or wells on such lands may be connected, free and clear of all royalties. Okay. That can only be talking about the well site. I mean, you've got, you know, tanks, other receptacles to which the product can be placed. That has to be at the wellhead. That can't be at the point of the major pipeline. And so Bluestone's problem is they've admitted, Mr. Gibson admits in his affidavit, that they're charging my clients these post-production costs at the mouth of the well because of the in the pipeline language. But that Burlington language is different, and there were so many contracts considered to get to the conclusion in Burlington that particular language was satisfactory to place the valuation at the mouth of the well, that I think we just have a different case here. And like I said, the treatises have that language too. We don't have any language that would just make it, that would hit people over the head and say, hey, we're talking about it at the well site. We don't have that here. And so because they are charging us at the mouth of the well, and because they say that is the very same thing they would be charging us with going into their gathering system, then they are clearly violating this lease by charging us post-production charges for every point after the mouth of the well. And so
but you're not asking us to reverse Judge McCoy's decision about transportation costs.
You know, I'll be honest with you, my opinion about this case changed as it went on and we had two or three hearings, and I am not asking that the court do that, because I think to do that requires you to completely ignore that qualifying language. You'd have to completely ignore it, because you can't, you know, the problem is that their argument violates the terms of the lease. And so I think that Judge McCoy used every word in this deed to come up with this conclusion. I think she tried to harmonize everything, understand the facts of the case that were stipulated, and decided that, okay, it's a cost-free royalty, but just like Hyder, they come back and take something away, and what they take away is the post-production costs after it enters into the pipeline. It can't be, and she concluded, I think, it can't be as it enters the gathering system because that would violate the terms of the lease, because Gibson says that's exactly, that's mouth of the well charging. So her, I am not asking that she be reversed. I'm asking that her her conclusion and her order be confirmed. That's what we're asking for. You know, in closing, I would just say that I believe that Bluestone's argument is illogical and self-contradicting. You know, they say that the free of cost in the pipeline is the language that controls, so they admit there's a pipeline, but the deed says you can't value it at that point. If you compare it to Judge McCoy's approach, you have a cost-free royalty like Hyder, qualified by more specific language. And basically what she's saying is it's free of cost in the pipeline because both parties agree there is one. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal?
Thank you, Justices. One of the things that Mr. Pennington just said, and I've, for the record, I've very much gotten along with Mr. Pennington during this case. He's a good guy. One of the things that Mr. Pennington just said is that Mr. Gibson's affidavit, with paragraph 7 of his affidavit, says that Bluestone's paying at the mouth of the well rather than in the pipeline. Mr. Gibson's affidavit, we attached it as an appendix to our reply brief because it's important. And what Mr. Gibson actually says in paragraph 7 is that there are no costs between the mouth of the well and the point at which the gas goes into the Crestwood pipeline. Mr. Gibson says in paragraph 7, put another way, plaintiff's royalty is calculated on the basis of the value of the gas at the point it enters the Crestwood pipeline system, which in this case is the same as the value of the gas at the mouth of the well. And so if Bluestone had tried to impose some layer of cost between the mouth of the well and the entry into the Crestwood pipeline system, then yes, it would be very important what this deed says about the difference between mouth of the well or in the pipeline. And in the pipeline would trump because it says otherwise, and I agree with Mr. Pennington about that. But there are no costs between that point. And the reason is what all is said in Burlington, which is that these words, according to the Texas Supreme Court, connote a generally equivalent place which is at or near the mouth of the well when the costs cease being production costs and become post-production costs. Unlike a lot of these other cases, we don't have even arguably a proceeds royalty measure. We don't have one of these long, you may not deduct this, that, or the other clauses that sometimes cause us consternation. You don't have any of that. You have what I would suggest is a fairly vanilla non-participating royalty interest. And it does, and since the default is that it therefore must bear its proportionate share of post-production costs, what we're looking for is language that would change that, and we don't have that language here. It's undisputed that It's undisputed that compression and transportation and processing are types of post-production costs. Compression is expressly listed in sort of the laundry list of types of post-production costs that the Burlington case puts in at page 203 of that opinion. It says, although parties to an agreement may define post-production costs any way they choose, the term generally applies to processing, compression, transportation, and other costs expended to prepare raw oil or gas for sale at a downstream location. So it's cost to prepare. It includes compression. There's no dispute but that the Crestwood costs are, in fact, post-production costs, and so therefore they're going to need to be deducted. Now, there were some questions about the Barra-Shaver case from Justice Basil, and what Mr. Pennington said is that the Barra-Shaver case says evidence of surrounding facts and circumstances, including evidence of industry custom and usage, cannot be used to add, alter, or change a contract's agreed on terms. He says that he doesn't fall afoul of that rule because Mr. Murphy is not doing that. He's just explaining a term. Well, that's not exactly right. He is adding a term, which is major or sales pipeline. And if you look carefully.
Well, I think what he's now arguing is it's a technical term.
That's what Mr. Pennington is arguing. And what Mr. Murphy's affidavit says, and again, we object to this, but what he says is, under these traditional gas gathering and purchasing arrangements in the pipeline as set forth in the 1986 deed, refers to the pipeline of the gas pipeline company that purchased the gas. Well, we don't have those facts here. So that statement from Mr. Murphy's affidavit, in fact, does not support the judgment that that Judge McCoy entered, because the facts are the gas is sold after it's been in the downstream transportation contract. And the point of all of this is that the deed was done in 1986 prior to the oil and gas lease, prior to any oil and gas production. It would not have been possible at that time to anticipate exactly how this would work. You don't know if it's going to be oil, which therefore you would just put into tanks at the mouth of the well, or if it's going to be gas. If it is gas, and if there is a pipeline, we're obligated to get it to the pipeline, and we've done that. That's the evidence from Mr. Gibson. It also applies to other minerals, and so that's why you have to get into the mouth of the well or the mine, because you don't know what you're going to get. And so that being the case, it was intended to be flexible. It has to be interpreted based on the plain words on the page. It says pipeline, and the evidence is that all the costs happen after it enters the pipeline. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate your argument. It's been very helpful, and your case is now submitted. We'll take a brief recess for a panel change.